brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordalo, here with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They're both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they are pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. Peter, where are we in the church year?
We are talking about the last Sunday of the church year when we think about kind of the end of the season of Pentecost. We think about Christ the King, the one who reigns over all. We think about kind of end times. It's a time where we think about the mark and the transition of time. So you can kind of have a couple different emphases on this last Sunday.
And what are the texts for this week, David?
Isaiah 51, Jude 20 through 25, Mark 13, and Psalm 93.
As always, I ask each of you to tell me which text you would choose to preach about to determine who goes first. So in the Mark passage, Jesus talks about the lesson of the fig tree. Fig Newtons, yes or no?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
why do you not like Fig Newtons?
I hate Fig Newtons. They're always supposed to be tasty, and then they're dry and they're crumbly, and the fig isn't like real jelly.
Where do you buy them?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't buy them. That was my childhood experience. I hate Fig Newtons.
Oh, gosh. I like them. They're sweet. You get those little seeds in your teeth.
Oh, those are awful.
No. David, you win. Okay. I love Fig Newtons. Well, the lesson of the Fig Newton. David wins.
The lesson of the Fig Newton. Yeah, well, I am actually going on that passage from Mark 13. Peter, I think you're right, though. The last Sunday of the church year, you were listing all the things it could be,
right?
I mean, it just doesn't feel like we have as much of a tradition on the last Sunday of the church year as we could have, right? Because Christ the King would be a great Sunday to celebrate the rule. But then there's also the transition from one year to another. I knew a pastor once who on Advent said Happy New Year, and people were like, what is going on?
Yeah. and you kind of got to be careful if you go that move because, you know, it kind of makes a point, but it is a little bit detached from normal life.
Right, yeah. So it's a struggle. And the texts are somewhat difficult also, I find, right? Mm-hmm. So we're in that apocalyptic discourse in Mark. So Mark 13 is the one that I would look at. And Jessica, if you could read just verse 27 and 28.
And then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branches become tender and put out its leaves, you know that summer is near.
Okay. I just chose those two verses, but I could have basically chosen any two verses from this text. I chose those two verses because to me they are so completely different from one another. The first part of the verse is about the angels and the four winds and from the ends of the earth and gathering the elect. And it's this cosmic vision that is really hard to picture or understand. And then the next thing you get is this mundane fig tree that, you know, is everyone's supposed to understand this, right? I mean, the fig tree is something common. It's from daily life. And so we've got this mixture in the text of things that are way beyond our understanding, that we're not going to comprehend. And then it's punctuated by these very small glimpses into an everyday reality that we're quite comfortable with and we immediately get. And I just that juxtaposition is something that I think puzzles me, makes the passage difficult because it seems to be jumping around. But it's also something that I think I would lean into in preaching. Because when I read the text, and I thought, I immediately thought of you, Jessica.
Okay, good, because I have a list of questions.
Yeah, no, I thought Jessica's going to say, oh, well, I was hoping you'd cover this. I'm hoping you cover this, because there's a heck of a lot in this passage.
I'm glad that my voice echoes in your mind as you prepare sermons.
It does.
It is a favor to the people in the pew.
I know. So, I mean, like, what are the things that you're raising questions about?
Yes. You said that the first verse was something you couldn't understand, and the second seemed very earthy and understandable. I don't understand the earthy and understandable part, because right after that, Jesus says that when you see these things taking place, you know that it's coming. This generation won't pass away till all this takes place. What does that mean?
I know.
They all died.
That's
We're
what
still
I'm
waiting.
Saying. That's what I'm saying, is it goes from one to the other so quickly.
Yes.
Right? So you understand the idea of a plant puts forth a bud when it's about to bloom, right?
Sure, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there's nothing strange, hard to understand about that. But then all of a sudden you're told, you know, these things will happen before, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Well, what things? Are we talking about the destruction of Jerusalem? Are we talking about the second coming of Christ? Oh, it could be the destruction of Jerusalem. It could be the second coming of Christ. What's this, you know, what is it where Jesus doesn't know, but God the Father knows? So I thought Jesus is God. How does he? I mean, it's just like the text is
yes.
filled with these conundrums, these small statements that are not fleshed out. They're visionary. It's apocalyptic. And it's kind of challenging your imagination and kind of blowing up your worldview for a second there as this cosmological change is occurring. The heavens are changing, the sun is dark, and the moon doesn't give light. You know, you've got angels flying around gathering the elect. It's the end of times. It's the destruction of Jerusalem. It's all of this weird stuff. But then, oh, we've got a fig tree about to bloom. Oh, we've got a person who's keeping the house ready for a master who's coming back. I mean, those are really simple things. And so to me, I would describe this juxtaposition as a certain mystery or a mysterious certainty. That we've got certainty, you know, we know about fig trees, we know what it's like to keep a house, you know, we've got the certainty of what it is we're supposed to do, and yet it's surrounded by the mystery of when is all of this going to happen, and what is it going to look like when it takes place. And so we're invited by these words in this last discourse of Jesus to find ourselves living in a certain mystery. Jesus will return. How, when, where, don't know, but we do know he will return. And so our lives are always going to be living in this certain mystery.
I think that's really helpful, because the temptation is try to explain everything.
Right.
When you come to a tough text and you want to make it clear, make it certain, but there's a mystery here that you can't do that. And so you got to think, is the goal of the sermon to just explain everything?
Right. And people try.
Right.
Right. I mean, they go into the visions in Daniel, the visions in Revelation. They create this timeline and, you know, oh, this is the 50-headed beast and, you know, all of this stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, because we think that's the point, is being able to nail exactly when it's going to happen. And that is not the point.
And sometimes we think the point of a sermon is to just explain.
Right.
But the problem is not, for your hearers, is not always that they don't understand.
Right.
there's a different problem you're working with, which I assume you're going to
Right. Yeah, well, and it's this issue of living in the certainty of Christ's return when there's hardly anything I can point to that validates that, aside from the resurrection,
yeah.
right?
Right?
The resurrection of Jesus, the promises that God has spoken that always come true, and the promise that he will return. These are the things I hold on to, but I can't prove it. I can't give you the timeline. I can't explain, you know, the wars and the rumors of wars. Are these earthquakes? Is that hurricane? Is all of this stuff the end times? I mean, you know, every generation, people are asking, you know, is this the end time? Is now what's going to happen? And it's not a matter of figuring out when it's going to happen. It's a matter of being prepared for when it happens.
Yeah.
And to be prepared, you live in a certain mystery or a mysterious certainty, right? You hold on to the truth that this is going to occur, that Christ is Lord over all things, even though it sure doesn't look like it right now in our lives, right?
I think a sermon like that is really helpful. Like the paradox maintained tells me that it's okay that I don't get it, that two things can be true. And for me to hear you say that, to sit in the pew and be like, oh, good, I don't understand it, but it's okay.
Right.
Because sometimes you think, I need to understand all of this for it to be true. Like, how can I base my life around something that is just confusing? It seems like it's contradicting itself.
Yeah.
But if you tell me that it's okay that I don't understand everything about God, but I can still have faith in God, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really, really shouldn't say this. I'm going to talk about pregnancy, and I know nothing about pregnancy.
Yeah, since you're the expert in the room, go ahead, David.
I know.
I'm not saying anything.
Don't leave me alone here, Peter. I'll give you a Fig Newton. So you think about pregnancy. You know the child is coming, but you don't know the exact time. Is it going to be an 18-hour labor without an epidural? Is it going to be a quick birth? Is
yes,
it going to be two
right.
weeks ahead of time? Is it going to be 2 weeks late? You don't know the time unless you're scheduling a cesarean, right? I mean, you don't know the time, but you know it's going to happen. You live in the certainty that a baby is going to be born. You buy the stuff. You decorate the room. You tell everybody. You do all of that stuff, preparing your house and your lives for bringing this new child into this world, but you don't know exactly when it's going to happen.
Yes. I remember rocking in my baby's room, very pregnant, just being like, okay, everything's ready.
Wow.
This is the chair where I'm going to rock you. When are you going to come? I'm waiting.
It was probably had 4 months still to go, knowing you. But no, I mean, I think it's that type of a thing,
yes.
that there are certain things that we know are going to happen, but we don't know when. And we don't let not knowing when prevent us from preparing. We prepare anyway, because that's how we live in this kingdom.
Okay.
So for me, that would be kind of what I would lean into, is this way of life that doesn't have all of the answers in terms of when Christ returns and how it's all going to play out, but is definitely a way of life where we are living in the certainty that he will return, that he will raise the dead, that he will bring about the kingdom and the new creation. And so we are people who live in light of that second coming, even though we can't always explain it to everybody. We can live in the way of those who believe it.
That's absolutely comforting.
Yeah, that's a lifestyle response instead of kind of a logical or
right.
kind of cognitive response.
Yeah. That's kind of what I would shoot for.
Thanks, David.
Okay, I was thinking I would maybe preach on the Psalm, Psalm 93. I do continue to find Psalms so helpful in terms of naming and articulating the emotions and the struggles and the challenges of being a follower of God. And I also am a sucker for psalms that are short.
Okay.
Because you can kind of treat the whole psalm without going on too long. So I read Psalm 93, and I thought that would be a good one to go with. So maybe I'd start, Jessica, with having you read verses 3 and 4.
The floods have lifted up, O Lord. The floods have lifted up their voice. The floods lift up their roaring. Mightier than the thunders of many waters, mightier than the waves of the sea, the Lord on high is mighty.
All right. I'm noticing kind of like the fig tree in Mark, you know, the scriptures are so full of connections to creation. And you get the biblical authors look around and they see things that help them understand who God is and who they are. And this is one of those times that especially those verses you just read about the floods and the waters and the pounding of the sea makes me think of when I was at the ocean. You guys have been to the ocean when there's big waves, and they just, at least for me, I always feel like okay, when's it going to stop?
Oh.
And the waves just keep pounding, and the waves just keep pounding, and the roar just does not end. And so I think about, you know, I always feel very small when I go to the ocean, just because the sea is so deep. So you've got this image of the thundering of the waters, the waves of the sea. You've also then got in verse 3 these, the floods have lifted up. They've lifted up their voice. They've lifted up their roaring. And you think about the connotations of flood and chaos and destruction. And you have this relentless escalation of I would say, chaos here. And so, of course, what's on my mind right now is, you know, it wasn't too long ago that the hurricane season was going on with the hurricanes in Florida. And you think about the national chaos that always seems to accompany elections and what follows from them. And then, of course, people have their own lives that are, you know, sometimes life is going pretty smoothly. Sometimes things are going just fine. But oftentimes it's kind of this escalation of the wheels coming off and chaos and struggle.
And you feel very small.
Yeah, you feel
like,
very small.
Does God even see this happening to me?
You feel in relation to God small. You also feel like you just don't have much control.
I can't do anything with this, right?
Yeah. I was actually looking at, for another project, I was looking at images online of the aftermath of Hurricane Milton. And the images that the Atlantic has kind of a photo collection, and the images of the one image that stood out was they had this aerial satellite view of the hurricane kind of approaching through the Gulf, and this thing was like the size of half the United States moving toward, and all the chaos and the flood and the destruction of that that brought. Mightier than that, verse 4, mightier than that, mightier than the chaos, the ecological chaos, the personal chaos, the national chaos, mightier than the floods, mightier than the pounding of the seas, the Lord on high is mighty. And I look at how small I feel compared to the largeness of the chaos. And I think, oh, man, that's nothing compared to the smallness I feel before God, who is mightier than all that. And yet God has found it good to value me and to care for me. And so the psalm gives us this contrast, or this comparison, I guess, between the floods and the oceans and the Lord. And all of this would be kind of, just frankly, kind of terrifying if it weren't for verse 5. And so, Jessica, would you read verse 5?
Your decrees are very trustworthy. Holiness befits your house, O Lord, forevermore.
Especially that verse, the first half. Your decrees are very trustworthy. And so you've got this situation where we as humans recognize how small and how vulnerable and how helpless we are. And the Lord is mighty, but more importantly for us than his might is his trustworthiness.
Mm.
And so his decrees, his commitments, his word is trustworthy. It is faithful. It is sure. And so I think if I were to kind of preach on this psalm, I would invite the hearers to recall some of God's decrees. And you could go a couple different places. You could choose one of the other readings. The passage from Isaiah 51 talks about the salvation of the Lord is coming. So that's a trustworthy decree. The Mark 13 talks about the return of Jesus. Jesus is the Son of Man is coming back. That is a trustworthy decree. Jude 20 and 21 and 22 talks about the mercy of Jesus Christ, mercy that leads to eternal life. And so that decree of God's mercy, you could go with any of those. The one, though, that stood out to me is not one of the other readings, but as I think about how small and how helpless and how vulnerable we are, I thought of Jesus' words in John 10, where he's talking about his people, and he says, "My sheep hear my voice. I know them. They follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand." I think about this decree that God has made to each of us. He's made to all of us in our baptism, that no one will snatch you out of my hand. That is a trustworthy decree.
It makes me think of that one in John 16, I think it is. You know, in the world you have trouble, but fear not, I have overcome the world.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tribulation.
So, yeah, the tribulation, the trouble, and then the promise of God.
What do you have any promises, Jessica, that just come to mind that you find to be so comforting?
I like that comparison of chaos to water, to things being out of your control, right? Because I couldn't control the waves. There's nothing I could do about it. But sometimes that is like if you're in the midst of something in life and you're like, I can't do anything. I can't make a plan to get out of this. I don't have anything to do to change it. I just have to wait till the waves are done. I just have to try not to die until the storm is over, you know? And that God would promise to be stronger than the waves and that I can trust him, that he's mightier than the waves and that he's going to hold me. That is very comforting. And sometimes that's the only comfort you have.
Yeah, I think that's the life by faith, is to trust that God has you, that God is mightier, that he is stronger, because the floods and the sea is pretty powerful.
And that he's good.
Yeah, he's good. He is a good, faithful, trustworthy Lord overall.
What I like is that contrast. The sea or the floods have a voice and they're roaring. Mm-hmm. But a roaring voice is not communicating anything. It's, you know, I mean, I'm sure people remember the sound of Hurricane Milton or the sound of a tornado that's coming. You remember what it sounds like, but it's not saying anything. So you've got this chaos that's making this noise that's a roaring and a thunder. And then you've got God, who's mightier than the chaos, and his voice actually means something. It's a decree, and it's a promise, and it's trustworthy, right? So you've got that nice contrast there.
And that just opens up the opportunity to proclaim any of the comforting promises of God in Christ that are either important to your congregation or that are personally very significant for you. But that contrast, I think, would be where I would go with the sermon.
Awesome. Thank you, Peter. That's all for today. We have free resources to guide that next step in your planning at concordiatheology.org. Check it out. While you're there, you'll also find episodes of our other podcast. It's called Tangible, Theology Learned and Lived. You can find more episodes of Lectionary Kickstart and Tangible on any of the major podcast apps. If you'd like to see the show continue, please subscribe, share, leave a review. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordalo. Join us next week here at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker will spark your thoughts for next Sunday.
Boy, I really, really, really shouldn't say this. I'm going to talk about pregnancy, and I know nothing about pregnancy.
Yeah, since you're the expert in the room, go ahead, David.
I know.